Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So anytime now, tomorrow, Saturday, maybe in 30 seconds, who knows, the Barack Obama campaign will announce the name of his running mate via text message to supporters who have signed up. That will be a whole lot of thumbing going on at once by more than a million people who are on that list. And we wondered, with texting still relatively new in this country, has there been anything like this kind of massed text message drop before? And can the system even handle it? With me to talk about this and also about the backdoor campaign donations we'll be seeing at the Democratic and Republican conventions is Mika Sifri. He's a founder of Tech President, which follows the new media side of the presidential campaign, and a founder of the Sunlight Foundation, which tries to shine its rays on things that politicians want to hide. Hi, Mika. Welcome back to WNYC.
Always good to be here, Brian.
So let's start with texting. How will this work exactly when Obama is ready to announce?
Well, the campaign is holding the actual details pretty close to its chest, obviously. And, you know, I've been asking around. I don't think anybody's ever tried to send a million text messages at once, and we don't really know the exact number. So we're guessing that they may have something like that, many people who have signed up. They've gotten a tremendous amount of publicity for this, obviously, and clearly there will be some people who will be unhappy because there's no way in the world that we're all going to get this message at the exact same time.
Really? Why not?
Well, I just think from a technical standpoint, you know, some of the experts I've talked to say that something like 2% of text messages simply don't get delivered, and some get delayed. You know, this is why, if you're thinking, why don't we just use text messaging as like an emergency broadcast system? And some universities, by the way, you know, in the wake of the Virginia Tech shootings,
right,
have implemented systems that include, you know, text messaging students as one of the ways you get a message out quickly, but you can't rely on it to be 100% effective all the time. I mean, look, we're talking the phone companies here, right? So I think there will be a few people scratching their heads going, how come I didn't get the message at the same time as everybody else? But, you know, for something like 96 to 98% of the people who have signed on, we should all hear this at roughly the same time.
Now you have a good excuse, people. If there's a text you don't want to reply to, just when the person calls you up angry, you know, you say, well, you know, 2% of text messages don't actually reach their destination.
Yeah, well, it's like everything else, you know, dropped calls and I can't hear you right now. I mean, the thing that's interesting is it's not been tried before. It's garnering the Obama campaign a huge amount of free attention. I mean, it's going to cost them something. Let's say it's a million messages they're sending at 2 or 3 cents a message, assuming they've negotiated some bulk deals. You know, that's $20,000 or $30,000. But the free publicity is way more than that. The thing I've been wondering about today is what happens if all million of us, after we get that message, write back? Is the Obama campaign going to have to pay 10 or 20 cents, you know, for each reply? What have they, you know, what have they put in place to deal with that? Will this affect the rest of the system? I doubt it. I mean, the numbers are amazing. There's something like 20 billion, with a B, text messages sent and received in the United States every month.
Yeah. So maybe the wording will be, it's Evan Bayh. Thanks for supporting the Obama for President campaign. Please do not reply to this message.
That may be. You know, the funny thing is, in the last 2 days, given all this intense attention that's been focused on this, there are a lot of people playing and spoofing around this now.
Oh, really? I was just going to say that I'm surprised that no one has tried to game it yet, because certainly if you, with the people you know, or if I, with the people I know, sent a text saying, Obama picks Hillary, you know, to all the people on our media lists, they'd probably all race to be the first, and our made-up story would be all over the network news in 5 minutes.
Yes.
Lots of people could pull that kind of stunt if they wanted to.
It's happening. It is happening as we speak. Wonkette, which is a pretty popular blog based in Washington, D.C., posted instructions yesterday on how you can go on the Verizon website, Verizon Wireless, and there is a page from that site where you can, you know, put in a bunch of phone numbers and send a message. And in the field where you're supposed to put your reply, your number, you can just put the Obama 62262. That's their text short code.
Right.
So it sort of looks, if you're not paying attention, like it's coming from the Obama code. You still have to put in your cell phone number as the originator of the message. So I did try that yesterday with a friend of mine who's a Washington Post reporter.
And
a few minutes later, I got back a message saying, nice try. That would sure be interesting.
What if he had actually put it on the Washington Post website? You would have been in big trouble with it.
Well, clearly, everybody has to be a little careful these days. There are, you know, I mean, rumors go around on the web, and just because something appears on Drudge doesn't mean it's true. If anything, you know, you have to be twice as skeptical. I think it's interesting that Obama is doing this. I think the amount of attention it's getting is way beyond what it deserves. It reminds me of 4 years ago when, you know, there was all this excitement over the fact that the Democratic Convention was credentialing bloggers for the first time. And I remember being up in the blogging section at the convention, and tourists and other reporters would come up and say, oh, are you blogging right now? I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was a little bit because the conventions themselves have been so drained of meaningful news. I mean, we know what's going to happen, right? I mean, this is about the only thing we don't know is who's going to be the VP.
Well, we know who's going to get nominated. The reason that we're taking this show to the conventions is because I think there's a really interesting story to be told about the state of the Democratic Party, the state of the Republican Party.
Yes.
They're both in flux in 2008. Who are the grassroots Americans who are active in the two major political parties this year? And what does this mean for the future of the country? So it's not like nothing happens.
This is true.
Plus the swag watch that we'll be talking about later. but you have a really interesting story on the texting on Tech President. And you really put it in context, because this is not just a way for the Obama folks to look hip and trendy. There's really more to it than that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things here, this is, I mean, they continue to pioneer the use of technology in politics. You know, they were the first campaign, sort of building on what the Dean campaign did 4 years ago, to really embrace social networking, and they have more than a million people registered and active on the MyBo site, mybarackobama.com. And for them to make this big push into texting, you know, what hasn't been noticed is they have a whole mobile platform now, and they're aiming at young people. I mean, the fact is that something like 20% of people under the age of 25 no longer have a landline phone. They're mobile, and their mobile phone is the way you reach them.
Mm-hmm.
This is still a fairly small group in terms of, you know, who's politically active, and, you know, they don't vote at the same numbers. But there's a lot of evidence that reminding people to go out to vote by sending them a text message will increase turnout by a couple of percentage points. And this is also a great way to, you know, there's no spam yet, very little spam in terms of text. You know, 95% of all text messages get opened right away by the recipient. And so the Obama campaign is quietly, what they're doing here is building up another tool for them to connect directly to a very important part of their base. People may not realize, you know, you can text VP to 62262 and you'll get the announcement of who, you know, their VP is. If you text MNWFO, you will get updates of interest to women.
Hmm.
And they're doing this with other segments as well, and I think it's smart.
You mean from the Obama campaign, you'll get things of interest to women?
Yes. If you text MNWFO, I mean, that's a code that they're using for women, and, you know, they're trying to segment their audience. If you use their mobile tool, which is m.barackobama.com, and most mobile phones now, the newer ones, are web-enabled, you get a website that has been designed to look good on your mobile phone. If you go to the John McCain site, they don't have anything like that yet. And you can download position papers straight to your phone. Again, I don't know how many people are actually going to do this.
Right. And McCain's been going up in the polls this summer, and Obama's been going down. But I read that campaign texting proved to be a cheap and effective get-out-the-vote tool for not only for Obama in Iowa and elsewhere during the primaries, but also for other politicians in the 2006 elections. Do you know about that?
Well, there's been some studies done that show that if you make the extra move to remind people by text just before the election to go out and vote, that that will up turnout by something like 4% against a control group. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but it's very cost-effective.
Lot in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, frankly, if the election's going to be close, every little piece of the puzzle matters. And, you know, I think one of the things that people may not know, you know, the polls may show the race tightening, but the Obama campaign is investing serious resources in what we call the ground campaign. And now their version of a ground campaign is really technologically quite sophisticated.
Right. So texting the Veep choice and having people sign up for this so they can be on that list has the secondary benefit of priming the pump for election day.
Well, I would argue that it has the primary benefit.
Yeah, exactly.
This is really about building that list up. And you know, figuring out if they can segment it a little bit into, you know, particular audiences. By the way, when you sign up, they do ask you for your zip code. They do want to know, if possible, where you live so that, again, they can concentrate alerts. I mean, when Obama appears somewhere, people are getting alerts in advance. You and I don't get it. He's not campaigning here in New York. It's not a big priority for him to campaign in New York. But people will get it around other localities around the country. It's that sophisticated.
Do you know, by the way, this series of texts of interest to women, what kinds of things they're putting out?
I don't. I assume it's just position papers at this point.
Does anybody read a position paper on their cell phone?
Well, let's call it a position memo, maybe.
A position tweet. All right. And you know, before we bring in another guest and kind of change gears here, you know, I made a remark about McCain going up, Obama going down. But seriously, for all this cutting-edge technology, Obama lost the lion's share of primaries since February and then has been going down in the polls the last month. So how effective is all this new media? I mean, Ron Paul led the Republicans by galaxies in terms of YouTube views, but he only got like 7% of the vote.
You know, the answer is we still don't know for sure. We do know that Obama is raising record amounts of money every month, $50, $51 million a month. I mean, it's become a normal amount when people don't realize just how phenomenal that is. He's got more than 2 million individual donors to his campaign, which is an unprecedented number. George Bush didn't come close to that number in 2004. So I think that we still don't know, Brian. And one last thing, don't forget this election is not decided in the national polls. It's decided by the electoral vote. Last I looked, according to pollster.com, Obama had something like 264 electoral votes, either safely or probably in his category, in his column, as opposed to McCain at about 160, and the rest were toss-ups.
Right, and we had Nate Silver recently from 538, which is a website that kind of tracks the various polls, and they took the name 538 because that's the number of total electoral votes, and he also had Obama with a sizable electoral vote advantage as of a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to take a break. Then we'll continue with Mika Sifri from Tech President and the Sunlight Foundation, and also bring in Massey Rich from the Center for Responsive Politics as we hop on board the swag train for the Democratic and Republican conventions. Who will be funding the fun the next 2 weeks, because they want something from government? And we can take your phone calls and comments on either of these things, the texting or the swag watch, at 212-433-WNYC. Call us up, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've begun our 30 Issues in 30 Days nominating process. What does that mean? That means go to our webpage and nominate an issue to be included in our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. More than 60 people have nominated already. We will hold a vote on your issues online next month. Nominate them now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So when we do this program from the Democratic and Republican conventions the next 2 weeks, one of the things we'll do is to follow the swag trail. The conventions are notorious dumping grounds for political money from corporations and other special interests trying to get around the usual campaign finance laws. The rules that cover giving to candidates do not all apply to throwing convention parties, giving away convention goodie bags, and things like that. So as we see the food and drink and souvenirs flowing in Denver and St. Paul, we will be reporting on who's dishing it out and what the donor actually wants from government. And with me now to preview the swag trail are Mika Sifri, who is still here from Tech President and the Sunlight Foundation, and also Massey Rich from the Center for Responsive Politics. Massey, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Glad to be here.
So the Campaign Finance Institute estimates that more than 170 corporations, unions, and other special interest groups are funding the conventions with more than $112 million. Can you give us a sampling of the array of these donor organizations?
Yeah, these are the same groups that you're probably seeing sponsoring a lot of ads at the Olympics or branding themselves at the Super Bowl, because we are really about to enter the major sporting event of politics next week and the week thereafter. But the companies on the list range from Allstate Insurance to Amgen Pharmaceuticals, Anheuser-Busch, Archer Daniels Midland, the big ag company and ethanol provider of corn, Morgan Stanley, Motorola, Google is on the list, Hewlett Packard, Coca-Cola, you know, the brands that we're used to seeing, and also the top spenders on lobbying year after year in Washington. This is really just an extension of a larger lobbying strategy that goes on every day of the year here in D.C.
Mika, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, having been to a number of these conventions, I always tell my friends that you should try and go at least once, because it is the only time that, you know, you can sort of glimpse the entire political industrial complex in the flesh. And not that you can get into all those parties. Some of them are pretty tough tickets, but the whole thing does sort of feel like an extended version of high school, and who's got tickets to the cool parties is one of the things that everyone talks about. I mean, in fact, it's part of the reason why I'm not going to the conventions this year. I'm a little bit sick of it, and I thought a younger one of our staffers might enjoy themselves more.
Do you know, either of you, any of the actual swag the delegates will be treated to in Denver or St. Paul? You know, what kinds of toys or fancy eats they'll be giving away this year?
Well, there's a limit on how lavish this stuff can be.
There is a limit.
I read one article that a group that planned to give away cigars had to downgrade to $10 cigars so that they could be within the general guidelines. I think no one really knows exactly what the rules are here. The ethics laws that took effect last year lay out some guidelines. You know, if you can go if there's food and you're standing to eat it, but if you're sitting, that's a problem. You can go if it's a widely attended event, meaning more than 25 people there are not members of Congress or their staffs. Well, that's the whole point of this, you know, to fill the room with lobbyists and other people who are not members of Congress and talk to those people. You can go if they talk about official business, if there's a pamphlet handed out about, you know, ethanol, or there's a video shown to prevent underage drinking at the distilled spirits event, which is one thing that's planned. And, you know, then there's tons of swag just handed out in bags. And at every opportunity, I'm wondering whether I should pack anything in my suitcase. Maybe I should just dress myself in T-shirts and other accessories that I can collect from these corporate sponsors.
Yeah, you won't have to go with any clothes. And just one day's...
That'll make me especially popular at the party.
That sure will. Certainly conspicuous. Or one day's worth, anyway. And then you'll come home with all the golf shirts and the flip-flops and everything else. By the way, Mika, here's a post on our website that relates to the text messaging and Obama standing in the polls. And it says, I heard that the pollsters can't call cell phones, so they can't account for the population that doesn't have a landline, which would be a, by and large, Obama population.
No, that's not true. They can. They don't have to take the call. The number of people who don't respond to pollsters' calls keeps going up and up. But if a pollster randomizes their calling, they will get some cell phone users. But the caller's right. We don't know if there's a substantial undercount of young people. But it's not technically true that that pollsters can't call cell phones.
Jennifer in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Good.
I wanted to, in my idealistic vision of the world, it would be nice to see at the Democratic National Convention, rather than all the swag that they might give away, say, well, we're donating X number of dollars to this charity on your behalf, and there's so much need in the NEA for the arts and for other organizations, education or whatever, that it would be nice to maybe put the money there rather than in flip-flops.
Massey, anything like that?
That is happening, Jennifer. At the conventions, one way that they're getting around the prohibition on corporate sponsorship of events and providing meals and other favors to lawmakers is that they're hosting charitable events. So, a pharmaceutical company might pick a health-related cause, or the home builders might might choose Habitat for Humanity or something like that, and the event will go toward benefiting those organizations. But still, the event itself is an elite gathering of the people who the corporation would like to reach back in Washington. I don't expect that many minds are going to be changed, or even that many meaningful conversations are going to go on at these events. But relationships will be built or cemented, and then that will carry over into to Washington when everyone leaves Denver and Minneapolis and comes back here.
Jennifer, thank you. 212-433-WNYC. If you want to join this, 212-433-9699. And all you have to join is the conversation, by the way. 212-433-WNYC. Talk a little bit about that process. Miki, you want to do this first? How does the influence that Massey was just referring to work afterwards?
Well,
I mean,
do
lobbyists call up a member of Congress and say, hey, remember that big plate of shrimp we had out there at the convention party? Well, let me talk to you about this telecommunications bill. Or how does that work?
It isn't as crass as that. And what we need to realize is that this is a social world, and this is about mostly reinforcing relationships that already exist as opposed to launching new ones over a plate of shrimp. But these parties that happen around the conventions and all the fundraisers that happen that lobbyists will host on behalf of members of Congress back in Washington are part of this, the hidden networking and access and influence peddling that goes on every day. The Sunlight Foundation just launched a new site that aims to track all of this and make expose these relationships to greater view, because it's that when a lobbyist throws a party on behalf of a member of Congress and then invites lots of people to come and it's to raise money on behalf of that member, that's when the member really remembers, this person helped me with my campaign. The next time he calls my office, I see his name on a pile of messages to return, I'm far more likely to return that message. And that's the all of this is legal. But it creates an insider culture where some people have a lot more access to the ears of our elected representatives than ordinary people. And it's because of their ability to raise and deploy money, whether it's fancy parties or actual campaign contributions. And what goes on at the conventions is just, it's all at once, compacted in 4 or 5 days. And, we have a list on politicalpartytime.org of more than 370 parties. It's actually a list that was leaked from a major lobbying shop. What Sunlight is doing with Political Party Time is we've got people forwarding us actual copies of invitations to upcoming events, and we're posting them on the site along with the price of admission, where the event is happening, what the menu is, So you can have a little bit of fun and figure out, you know, who hosts what and where. But the real story here is the relationships between the hosts, the lobbyists, and these other folks who will put on lots and lots of events on behalf of lots of legislators, and then tracking back and seeing later how those relationships play out. That the goal here is to shine more light and make it, you know, it ought to be out in the open.
Yeah, that's a great piece of crowdsourcing, if you will, that you're doing there, having people forward you the invitations that they're getting.
Yeah. And how many invites do you get, by the way, Brian?
You know, we've only gotten a few so far, and they tend to be media ones. But we'll definitely keep you posted with a swag watch when we're there. And there are always some funny and unusual items flowing. And as I said, one of the things we'll be doing at both conventions is specifically keeping an eye on who's paying for what party and what gifty bags and whatever, and, you know, then checking with you guys and some other people on what these particular organizations want from government. But I also have a feeling that some of these groups want their names up in lights and some want to keep it very quiet. So I know we'll be seeing some big parties, for example, Massey, with some corporate logos prominently displayed. I know we saw that at the conventions in 2004. But other donors want to keep their involvement with the conventions more quiet, right?
Sure. I don't think you're going to see major lobbying firms throwing their logos all over the place. And they're, you know, they're huge gatherings that will be covered by the media, and then there are more intimate gatherings that will take place behind doors that are more closed. This is all just part of the lobbying machine. Last year, by our calculations, lobbying interests spent $17 million a day for every day that Congress was in session. The sponsors of these conventions that Campaign Finance Institute has identified have contributed to federal campaigns and spent on lobbying about $1.5 billion since the last presidential election. So these 2 weeks are, you know, a relatively small slice of this, but it's a very intense period. The nearly 400 parties that Mika mentioned make it seem like something that's much bigger than what goes on in Washington, when in fact it's really just more of the same in a different venue.
Christopher in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Christopher. Christopher, you there? Okay, we don't have Christopher. Is disclosure required for donors to the conventions like it is for donors directly to the campaigns?
It's required, but it's delayed significantly. Not until 60 days after these conventions will we know who puts the money up for them, which corporations, which labor unions, and other interests. And by that time, we'll be about a week or two out from the actual election. I don't think people are really going to be that interested in what happened 60 days prior. Campaign Finance Institute's done some very good work in identifying some of these donors. We've pitched in with calculating their campaign contributions and lobbying. You can see the study on opensecrets.org or on cfinst.org and see the list that has been compiled, but we really don't know how much they're putting in. And that's the other thing to remember, is it's not just the events that these interests are sponsoring outside of the convention hall. They're also putting up money to put on the convention itself. And this is something that's not allowed in the rest of the campaign. There is essentially a suspension of the rules for 2 weeks to allow corporations, labor unions, and others just to write checks from their treasuries to put on what is a, you know, 4 and 5 day infomercial for each party and its nominee to help pay for the staging, all of the accommodations that need to be made for media and delegates and others, the transportation. All of that is going to be picked up by private donors. And there's also money coming in from taxpayers. People don't really realize this, but if you check that $3 box on your tax return, you're paying toward about $17 million to each party's convention in taxpayer money to help them make this show look good.
And we should mention that there are probably many corporations that donate to both parties' conventions. It's not just a Republican list and a Democratic list. It may be that to some degree. But, for example, the website cfinst.org, that's the Campaign Finance Institute, has a list of 10 of the, let's say, 31, at least 10 of the currently listed donors to the St. Paul Republican Convention are also giving to the Democrats in Denver, and they list those as Cargill, Best Buy, Target, United Healthcare Group, and XL Energy are some examples of that. It says, indeed, Cargill, United Healthcare, and Xcel Energy have indicated that they're giving approximately the same amounts to both party conclaves. Mika, does that tell you anything?
Yeah, it's called doubling down or covering your bets, I guess. I mean, either way, they win. They'll have a friend in both parties, and they'll have, in effect, boxed out potential competition. There are lots of individual donors who do this every cycle as well, though corporations are typically, and back in the bad old days of soft money, it was more apparent when you just see them investing in the candidates on both sides. Again, perfectly legal, and it leaves the rest of us with a bad taste because it looks like what they are doing is essentially locking in a relationship no matter who the president is.
All right. We're just about out of time, but Mika, it sounds like you're spreading your stuff around on a couple of different web addresses. Where do you want people to go to see what you're doing?
Well, techpresident.com is the main place, but if you want to learn more about how the party, how these political parties are partying, then you want to go to politicalpartytime.org, which is a project of the Sunlight Foundation, and you can find them at sunlightfoundation.com.
And CFR.org for the Center for Responsive Politics?
OpenSecrets.org is the way to get to our information. We'll be in Denver and Minneapolis as well. I think we'll be talking to you from there, Brian.
That's right. We've already set up with you to talk several times from the conventions.
And Open Secrets is where you can see how much certain industries that you care about have contributed to the candidates. That's the money that is disclosed and comes largely from individuals. It's also where you can use our donor search to look up any person who might be giving to the campaign and see how all of this adds up to the most expensive election ever.
All right, Massey Rich. And so far on the show today, we've talked about a runner named Bolt and had a guest named Rich who follows the money trail. That's appropriate enough. Massey, thanks a lot. Mika, thank you.
Thanks, pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we'll talk to WNYC's Bob Henley. The FDNY has just released its report on the Deutsche Bank fire. He's got the details. And we'll talk to one New York protester getting ready to head out west to make his voice heard outside the convention walls. Stay tuned.